Welcome to the Kingdom Crossroads Podcast with Pastor Robert Thibodeau. Using an interview format, Pastor Bob will introduce you to men and women whose ministries are impacting this world with the gospel, and will also provide commentary and insight on end-time prophetic events we now see happening in the news. Now here is Pastor Robert Thibodeau.
Hello, everyone, everywhere. This is Pastor Robert Thibodeau. Welcome to the Kingdom Crossroads Podcast today. Have you ever heard someone call 911? You know, usually when the emergency is happening and they pick up the phone and dial 911, the first thing they're going to hear is, 911, what's your emergency? Those are the first words most people hear when the dispatcher answers the phone as they call for emergency help. Police, fire, rescue, ambulance. The dispatcher asks that question so they know where to route the call for the fastest response. But what if you're caring for another person? What if it's your responsibility to provide care for an elderly parent or another family member, someone who's disabled or unable to care for themselves? What if they don't want you to call 911? I'll be fine. Just let me lie down for a few minutes. That's what my wife told me when I suspected she was having a stroke a few years ago. She was refusing to go to the doctor. I finally told her, you have two options. I take you to the ER, or the ambulance takes you to the ER. That's it. Those are your only two options. I made it clear she was no longer going to have a choice in that outcome. Now, we're going to hear from my guest today, co-author of the book, How to Survive 911 Medical Emergencies, Step-by-Step, Before, During, and After. This interview you are about to hear could literally save your life or the life of someone you love. Nancy May has spent her career working with CEOs, boards of directors, and senior leaders in the public and private sectors. These experiences have given her the strength and the foundation just to step in and provide for her parents with guidance and support as they aged and needed assistance as well. She credits her father, who is an entrepreneur and innovator in eyewear design, and her mother for encouraging her and preparing her to acquire the many skills needed to start and lead several successful businesses. She's transitioned these competencies and life lessons into her new business called CareManity LLC, which focuses on providing family caregivers proven, structured ways to obtain practical knowledge and access that much needed support. Now, Nancy was on our podcast a little over a year ago as we talked about building your board of directors. And you can go back to the archives and listen to episodes 450 and 451 for more information on that. Now, help me welcome back to the program, Nancy May. Nancy, thank you for coming back on the program today.
Thank you so much, Robert. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
Amen. Now, the first question I'll ask, other than that brief information I just shared for the sake of some new listeners that may not have heard our prior interview, tell us in your own words, who is Nancy May?
Oh, Nancy May is an entrepreneur, a corporate background. And as I look back, I probably say a little nuts at times. But
join the crowd.
But quite frankly, I'm a doer. I am somebody who, like, when stuck with a problem, I dive in and research and figure out the best way to solve the problem using as much creativity, interdisciplinary skills that I've got and built over the years. And then just knowing ultimately, you know, what's the right thing I need to do at the right time. And that's not always an easy thing to achieve. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when you've got the right tools and resources at your hands, then anything is possible, really. It's just the matter of putting one foot in the front of the other that so many of us are afraid to do. And so I'm kind of not afraid to step in the puddle, as you say, right? And if I do, you know, guess what? There's usually another side of the puddle to get out to.
Amen.
It's usually not too deep if I'm lucky.
Yeah. Amen. And you know, we both love the Lord. So I mean,
yes.
That's a very important part as well. But now this book you just released, How to Survive 911 Medical Emergencies. This is not a book simply about, you know, pick up the phone and call 911. This is just one tool that you should already have at your disposal, correct?
Absolutely. You know, the book, it has a big sort of scary title. We all want to survive 911, and we want to think that there's only the chance of survival. But sadly, there are many times that people don't survive 911.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the biggest thing that I think we need to be aware of is if we were not prepared or at least mentally prepared for an emergency, we're going to panic. Mm-hmm. And panic is not good for you or the person you care for or anybody else who may be touching on the peripheral side, so sisters and brothers and other relatives that are could be impacted by in a medical emergency that you're overseeing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, amen. And, you know, as I said in the opening, my wife didn't want to, she didn't want to bother the ambulance people. You know, she didn't consider her situation a true emergency. And really, it's only because of my training in law enforcement and as a first responder that I immediately identified what was going on. I mean, that's one reason I didn't give her any choice if she was going. It's just the matter.
She's my dad would say she's SOL. You made the choice.
That's right. Amen. And, you know, the only reason I even offered that choice is because I'd already done the processing in my mind. The ambulance company was one direction about 3 miles away. And the hospital was another direction 4 miles away. So I figured I could just throw her in a car and save 5 minutes time by driving her there myself. That's the only reason she got that option, you know. But in your book, how do you suggest your readers handle a situation like that? You know, where the parent or person you're caring for doesn't want to go to the hospital?
You know, that's a very good question. And it's difficult. Yet, you know, if you put the position, you pose the question a little differently. Said, you know, I care about you, Robert, and I want you to be with me for a very long period of time. Would you do this for me? And if there is a love and a connection, usually they'll say, oh, okay, you know, versus just refusing to do so. So I think if you turn the situation around a little bit, and help them understand that you're doing this for the love of them, but you also hope that they'll return the same kind of love, that's one way to handle it for sure.
Mm-hmm. Amen. Because I remember my grandfather and grandmother, and they could get, you know, put it bluntly, a little hard-headed sometimes.
<You know? laughs> I think it was a generation, right? They did everything themselves and they did it well.
Exactly. Yep. And, you know, they had their home remedies and all this stuff that they would insist on trying before going to the doctor.
Yep.
Now, you talk about preparing your home itself to receive EMTs that may have to respond to an emergency. What do you mean by that? And how do you do that? How is it achieved?
Well, you know, it's really interesting. I'll just add one thing in the beginning is in the beginning of the book, there's a quote that I use that the future depends on what you do today. Mm. And that's so in line with what the question you just asked. But you really need to prepare your home to make sure the right numbers are on the side of the house or in the front mm-hmm. of the house, that they're easy to see in a contrasting color. Because if you're aesthetically pleasing, you know, you'll have the colors of the number of your house kind of blend in with the rest of the house.
Yeah.
And, or you'll forget to put them on your mailbox if you're on a long driveway. And especially in rural environments, you may not even have the name or number on a mailbox, or the roads may not even be marked. So those are critical things that you need to do to make sure that the EMTs or the paramedics or the fire department can even find you. Mm-hmm. And you're surprised to hear the stories from the responders who say how difficult it is to get to somebody's home or apartment, sometimes in major cities, they don't even have the buildings marked. Mm. So they don't even know how to get to you. And minutes mean, you know, life or death in some cases to somebody. So just the simple act of putting your number on the mailbox. And I'll give you really a prime example. The other day, I was dropping off a book to somebody who helped me contribute this to this whole work that we were doing, and I couldn't find her house. Well, the number, you know, one of the numbers was off of the mailbox. I couldn't find which mailbox it was. The numbers on the streets were all disorganized. And this is somebody who works in the emergency system. I can't believe
that.
You told me it was like the fifth house along the street, but there was a double sidewalk or the double driveway, and I wasn't sure if there's a right one. So I just sort of blindly put it in a mailbox and I hope I got it to the right person.
Mm.
And they even went down the driveway to see maybe the house has a number on it. Nope. So, you know, I guess, you know, it's easier sometimes to tell people what to do to actually do it.
Yeah.
But yeah, we have, you know, we made sure that we have a big number right on the front of our mailbox. We have a number on the side of our house. We have a number at the end of our driveway, which is on a long driveway in a very rural area, just in case. So, you know, that's the first thing to do.
That's great advice right there, because a lot of people don't think about that.
And it's so simple. I mean, you can take paint and paint the number on. It doesn't have to be fancy. You can go to Home Depot or Lowe's or, you know, your Ace Hardware or any place and get a number. And technically, the number should be about 6 inches, the big ones for long distance. And you can be as, you know, small as 3 inches, but 6 inches is a really good one because you've got an emergency vehicle going by at a fairly rapid pace. Mm-hmm. You want to be able to sure that they can see it.
Yeah, amen. When you were explaining that, I thought back to my fire department days when I lived back in a rural town in Louisiana, and I wasn't born and raised there. I was stationed close by there because of the military, but I was a volunteer firefighter. And, you know, the call on the radio come out, Mrs. Burns' house is on fire, right? Well, I have no clue who that is. But the locals knew exactly who they were talking about. You know, so just because everybody else knows where I live, you know, that doesn't mean that if Joe Schmo is on vacation that week, everybody else is going to know. You know, he may have been the chief who knew everybody in town where they lived at. There has to be an address that you give that is readily identifiable so people can find you who have no clue who you are.
And GPS doesn't always cut it, right?
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
Turn left and end up on the railroad tracks. Nope, now we're not going there.
I used GPS one time as a cop to respond to a call. And it said, you know, turn here, turn here, turn here. And I could see the apartment complex on the other side of a ravine. It was a dead end right there. And then I had to go like 2 miles around to get there. But GPS, like, oh. This is, and the road was the same name. It just dead end, had a ravine, and picked up on the other side. You know? This is back when, you know, Google Maps was sending people out in the middle of the desert when they're looking for a doctor's office in town or something.
You know? Imagine, you know, the panic of, or the fear that's going through somebody that's waiting for the EMTs or the paramedics to arrive.
Yeah,
and that's right. And they can't find you. And they're just as frustrated because they've got their adrenaline running. They want to get there. They want to help you. That's their role.
Amen. Well, how do many family members get basically caught off guard, if I could use that phrase, when an actual emergency does arise?
Oh, another good question. So, you know, we're so used to being around those we love and not necessarily being aware of the subtle changes that are going on. So I'll give you a prime example. My dad, who passed away almost a year ago, September 11th of 2019. He was 99 years old. And I say he was 99 and 47 days because he wanted to get to 120. And those 47 days counted right down to the last second in my book. And I think it did in his. But, you know, there were times that my dad was never very good at sharing that he was feeling uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. So our aides and I'm not there. I'm a long distance caregiver, but our aides would sort of monitor and watch what was going on and just say, you know, Stu, are you OK? Oh, I'm fine. I'm fine. Just, you know, just go take care of Audrey, which is my mom. He was so concerned about her. But when they started to see that, you know, he was having a little bit more labored breathing. You kind of see it, right? Mm-hmm. And being very aware of subtle changes is so key and so important. And in asking and just sort of taking a pulse, you know, not a physical pulse, but just taking a pulse of the moment. And when in doubt, never question yourself. You know, always call the emergency responders. You can get on the phone. You can talk to somebody. You can call a doctor, certainly. But the problem with the doctors is that they want to have you come in, and even telemedicine is not going to be able to pick up the subtleties that you're going to see right then and there. So I think the biggest thing that a family member needs to do is just sort of be present as much as you can in the moments over the course of a day, and don't get numb to the subtle changes, because they're very important.
Yeah. Amen. I know, my wife's first stroke back in 2012, and last March at the time of this recording, the subtle change, I just picked up something, and
you could almost feel it in your blood, right?
And I asked her if she's okay. She goes, I got a small headache, but that's okay. And I ran her through the diagnostic process, and I could tell, people that just meet her would never know she had a stroke. But I know, because the smile is a little off of what it used to be, things like that. And, I ran her through a quick test, and the smile was even weaker than what it usually is. I said, we're going down. We're headed in. She goes, I said, we went through this before. Said, okay. She just gave in.
Better safe than sorry.
Yeah. And sure enough, she had a TIA.
My mom's had a number of them. Yep.
Yep. But like you said, the don't question when you believe something is off. That's so important, because they have no clue. To them, it's just a headache.
Yeah. And there's not a whole lot you can do with a TIA.
Within 1 hour, they can give them the injection and stuff.
Exactly. And it could get worse and turn into a full stroke. So you want to get, you want to get the care immediately.
Amen. And what should someone do if they're caring for a person who can't speak for themselves, not just in the emergency, but let's say on a normal basis, their communication skills are impeded by their condition. What can you do for them? What should you do in a situation like that?
Well, don't question. You are the one to make the decision and the judgment. And the first thing to do is call 911 and try and get as much information out of them. But you use all your senses: your eyes, your ears, touch. You'll feel if somebody's cold or are they burning up. Mm. You'll smells. You'll notice changes in the smell of people's breath. Anything that's going to pick up, that's going to change what you have become used to as being normal for them. Mm-hmm. And so when that happens, you have to be the advocate for them at all times. So, and including for the EMTs and the paramedics, mm-hmm. but having their records and knowing everything about them is so important to help the EMTs when they do, and the responders when they do come, because if you're not an advocate, and they're walking into a blind situation and they don't know your loved one.
Yeah.
You know them. So speak up. Don't be silent. This is a time when you're really needed probably more than ever.
Amen. Amen. In this day and time in which we live, at the time of this recording, with the COVID-19 issues going on, many people have been told, don't go to the emergency rooms.
Yep.
What should someone do if the patient doesn't want to go to the ER? Maybe, they don't even want to go sit in a doctor's office with other quote unquote sick people for 45 minutes to an hour or more. What should they do in a situation like that?
When they don't want to go to the ER
because of the virus. I don't want to catch a virus.
Yeah. That's a big issue. They're seeing a lot more cases of where people are not getting the emergency care because they're afraid of going to the emergency department now during COVID era. And that's creating a lot more at-home risks, I'll call it. Yeah. I don't have the full statistics, but there are comments that are coming out of the emergency and the hospital saying, well, wait a second, we're giving COVID cases, but we're not getting the normal percentage of heart attacks that we normally do. We're not getting the percentage of strokes. We're not getting the percentage of falls and cuts and other things that they would normally expect mm-hmm. over the course of an average week, month, or day. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of interesting to watch. So, in any particular case, you still have to go if there's an emergency. So I'll give you a prime example. Over COVID, my mom was having some issues, and my lead aide called me and said, Nance, I think we need to take her to the emergency department. And I said, I have no question. You go, you do what you have to. Turns out that she had the start of pneumonia, just a little bit, but enough that was making a difference in what they were seeing in her. So they're so tuned into my mom. The doctor eventually got really upset that they took her to the emergency department. But here's what happened. So in the ER, they did an X-ray and they didn't see anything. And then they did a more advanced kind of scan where they actually picked up that there was a start of pneumonia in a bottom left lobe. Mm. So if they had not had that higher level of quality equipment to detect it, they would not have picked it up with a home medical visit, which you can do. I mean, you can do X-rays and other kinds of scans at home with the visiting nurse types of professionals, but they never would have picked that up.
Yeah.
So in our particular case, our lead aide went with mom. She was allowed to go in to the emergency room with mom as an aide and an advocate because my mom's got dementia, moderate dementia, and they would not have been able to get the information out of her. If she was to stay in the hospital, however, that aide and that advocate could not stay with her. Right. But what happened is through talking to the doctor, we made the assessment that she didn't need to stay. Then once they diagnosed it, we were able to bring her home and do all the care that she needed at home.
Amen.
So that was critical. And, you know, I can be a little intimidating to the doctors.
Not someone who used to confront CEOs that they weren't doing stuff right. I can't picture that.
Out of my way. Here I come. I mean, I can be kind and nice, but I am as firm as a water buffalo. I'm trying to think what's the best analogy, but that was a pretty good one, I think.
Anyway, you recently experienced the effects of a hurricane where you live at. You were without power for many days. What should a person do if the 911 phone system goes down in a situation like that and there's an emergency?
So very, very good question. People don't realize that there are, I'll call them central receptor areas for the 911 system in many places of the country. And you can go online. I'll get you the link and you can have it. It's also in the book. But you want to make sure that your region actually has one of these. Ideally, what happens in those particular cases is the 911 system shuts down. You can't reach anybody. You can still text 911 and tell them that there is emergency and they will respond. So what happened, we went through this hurricane, a little tornadoes that went through the area. We were without internet and power and phone service. And we have a landline phone specifically. I haven't been without 30 years. It's never gone down in any storm. It went out this time. Oh. And I keep it because, you know, the old copper wire lines typically don't go down. In case of an emergency, if my line ever went down, my aides could always reach me. Well, they couldn't this time. So that was a little unnerving. But I did see on my phone that there was a little sign that popped up on my screen that said, emergency call only. So I knew that my phone was still tapped into the emergency system if I needed it. Amen. So it's very interesting to see that is set up literally all across the country. It may not be as good in rural areas. I can't say that 100%, but like I said, I'll send you the link so you've got it if you want to put in the show notes.
I'll put it in the show notes, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, that'd be great. You know?
Hey, folks, Pastor Bob here. We're all out of time for today's portion of the interview where I've been talking to Nancy May about her new book, How to Survive 911 Emergencies. Now, she's been giving us some great tips on how we need to prepare in advance for things that are going to happen for those that we care about, especially our elderly parents that, you know, that we are taking care of or people who are disabled and unable to take care of themselves. Folks, it is so important to prepare in advance for things that are going to happen. I mean, emergencies will happen. There's no doubt about it. And the better you prepare prior to the event, the more sure you are of the outcome. Because as a law enforcement officer, we always prepared for the worst so that everything else we already had taken care of. And that's what you need to do here as well. She's been giving some great advice, but this is just part one of three episodes that we'll be interviewing her. And we're not going to be covering a lot of information from one to the next. So you need to come back for the next episode to continue this conversation. But in the meantime, go down below, click the link, order her book. Order 2-3 copies of her book, because if you are already taking care of a vulnerable person, someone that you know, an elderly person or a disabled person, someone who cannot take care of themselves, I can almost guarantee you know other people in the same situation you are. So order 2-3 of these books, pass them out, sew them into their life, help them to prepare for what inevitably will happen, a 911 emergency. Now, until next time, this is Pastor Bob reminding you, be blessed in all that you do.
Are you a Christian entrepreneur, coach, or author with a message that needs to be heard? Picture this, your voice reaching thousands, your story inspiring hearts, and your business flourishing like never before. Introducing Faithcasters, the ultimate platform that connects faith-driven professionals like you with the power of podcasting. Become a sought-after guest on faith-based podcasts, share your unique insights, and connect with like-minded individuals who share your passion for faith and entrepreneurship as well. Imagine your expertise reaching a wider audience, expanding your network, and propelling your business to new heights. Well, it's all within reach with Faithcasters. So don't wait. Take the first step today on your journey to greatness by visiting our website at faithcaster.org. That's faithcaster.org. Join the Faithcasters community now and unleash the full potential of your faith-driven enterprise. You do not want to miss this opportunity. Faithcasters, where faith meets podcasting and your dreams become reality. Visit faithcaster.org. Let's soar together. And remember, anyone can be a podcaster, but only a Christian can become a Faithcaster. Faithcasters, your voice, your platform, your success.